5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we are live and we are back. Let's go. I'm Corey, your host. One half of the Quarter and Full of Pet Podcast. And I'm back like I never left with another installment of Wealth Wednesdays. I lied. This is not Wealth Wednesday. Another episode of Money Mindset. Here on the Quarter and Full of Pet Podcast, we discuss health and wealth, finance and fitness and everything in between. We want to make sure you save more and save less and keep making better your best. Yes, yes. These used to be called Wealth Wednesdays. Now they're called Money Mindset. This is what happened when I miss a week. Do not record. Thankfully, though, I got not videos in the tuck as far as full-length episodes, but all the videos that I've done, I got recording, so I'm still dropping on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. But again, we changed it from Wealth Wednesdays to Money Mindset. So in my head, I don't think, oh, I can't record or drop today because this has to come out on a Wednesday. That's why these are called Money Mindset now. And I know y'all see the topic of today's video, though. We're going to talk about what the middle class lifestyle is. Now, this is your first time listening. I love talking about debt on here. I am pretty sure debt is going to be, I wouldn't say heavily, but pretty involved as far as when we come to this article. I think it's at the Washington Post this time, about the middle class lifestyle. All right, but before we get started, make sure y'all like, share, and subscribe, comment, shout out to the YouTube algorithm. Make sure you leave those rating reviews on the podcast platforms as well. My information as well as my co-host Jordan information can be found in the description. And one day I'll probably end up making it a pinned comment. All right. And last but not least, don't sue me, sue your mama. This is for entertainment purposes only. Myself, no Jordan, or fitness surrounded professionals. Anything you hear is for entertainment purposes only. You need to reach out to a professional and do your own research before taking any action. All right. See, this is why I need, this is why I'm not supposed to miss, because I forgot the other two things we're talking about. We're not talking about car payments. We talked about car payments on the last episode, but student loans. We did student loans a couple episodes ago, maybe two or three episodes ago. Again, as I said, as the presidential, we got to be, the presidential campaign has to start ramping up here soon between President Trump, President Biden. But my guess is student loans should be involved in that conversation, at least from President Biden's side. So we'll probably wait till then to see, you know, what happens on that front. But long story short, I believe I still need to do some more research, especially for one of my clients. What Mohila has going on, what the hell they're doing with, like, they messed up and people got restarted or they moved or whatever the hell Mohila did once the payments restarted. But student loans are what they are. All right. But, and again, oh, yes. Am I taking out of context that? Shit. Since I did miss, if I can figure it out, when I say figure it out, if I take the time to actually look at it, y'all may end up getting that, depending on when you listen to this episode, but this Saturday. Because I got, that's one of the things where I talked about, well, the other reason we did Money Mindset, and so I don't have to have so much stuff in the backlog. The taking out of context stuff, aka podcast files, is adding up. So, excuse me, got a lot of stuff I need to get through for that, but that's it, y'all. Locked and loaded. Let's get started. We are going to go to, as I said, the Washington Post today. And if I forgot to say something, I'll just watch an older episode and remember what I'm supposed to say. All right, here we go. I'm struggling to share my screen. There we go. Boom. Here we go. What does that look like for y'all? Let me see. That doesn't look too bad. All right. How Americans define a middle-class lifestyle and why they can't reach it. Woo! I did not see the part of why they can't reach it. This should be interesting. Again, this is by, again, this is by Alyssa Fowers, Emily Guskin, and Scott Clement. It's February 15, 2024. It's not too far behind. All right, here we go. A poll from the Washington Post finds widespread agreement among Americans on what it means to be middle class. Interesting. We got agreements here, but just over a third of U.S. adults have the financial security to meet that definition, according to a Post analysis of data from the Federal Reserve. My assumption is Post meaning the Washington Post, with that capital P. Regardless, let me not talk about that type of stuff out loud. Americans also underestimate the income required for that lifestyle. Here we go. Suggesting that the popular image of middle-class security is more of an aspiration than a reality for most Americans. What do y'all think the number is as far as the income range for that middle class? Like, what do y'all think these ranges are going to be? How much are we going to get into the six figures, you know, 100K plus of how much people need to make? Obviously, this is Washington Post, and it probably has locations everywhere. But if this was done in the, you know, Washington Post, the DC area, look, That number is well over $250,000. Well over $250,000. About 9 to 10 U.S. adults said that 6 individual indicators of financial security and stability were necessary parts of being middle class in the post poll. Smaller majorities thought other milestones such as home ownership and a job with paid sick leave were necessary. Sick leave is going away. I haven't had a job with sick leave since I worked at the credit union. I've always just had PTO. This is what I had. What it takes to be middle class. Which of the following do you think Americans need to be considered as part of the middle class? A secure job? I mean, income by definition, duh. Ability to save money for the future. Okay. Yeah, not too much debt. Wait a second, y'all. Okay, ability to save money for the future, ability to afford a $1,000 expense without debt. That number should be, yes, I mean, that is a marker, but it should be more than $1,000 to be considered middle class. I mean, the middle class range, yeah, I mean, I've seen like so many different things, but yeah, I think it's, I mean, you got lower class, middle class, upper class, but the middle class range is like lower middle class, quote unquote middle class, and then upper middle class, right? And then you got upper class. Excuse me, that range in income is so wide. Then when you do based off of a certain, you know, geographic locations, that income range could be well over $100,000 from lower middle class to upper middle class. I mean, upper middle class, some places might be considered over $500,000, right? And lower middle class, you know, might not even be $100,000 per se. You know what I mean? So it could be crazy when you see that type of stuff. Ability to pay bills on time without worry. Sure. Having health insurance. My goodness. And ability to retire comfortably. See, you won't know if you can retire comfortably until you actually get to retirement because, in short, like for myself, I'm, you know, just based off of age, retirement, I mean, you do 59 and a half. So let's say that. It's almost 30 years for me until I would be 59 and a half. And so who knows? I've barely been alive for 30 years. So who knows what the world is going to look like when I actually get to retirement age. But, you know, when you base off the projections that they say people should have, majority of people who have money in their retirement accounts, based off of what the numbers I've seen, is, like I've always said, this is roughly around $250,000. That's not enough to retire right now. So if people, you know, stay on that trajectory, even when you adjust for whatever inflation is going to be, it's not going to be damn near. Nowhere near enough, whatever I'm supposed to say. That. Look, this is probably one of the latest times I've recorded. It's almost midnight. All right, having a job or pay sick leave, time and money for vacations, to own a home, ability to eat at a restaurant whenever you want. That is definitely getting closer to upper class. A college education. See, again, I'm hoping if they can define what they said middle class was to these people. Middle classness and predictability are very tied in the American imagination, said Caitlin Zalum, an anthropology professor at New York University, NYU. Sometimes that is about security in the present, but it also means feeling secure about where life is going. I would say owning your home involves being secure. I would say even more than, you know, being able to retire, because it talks about being secure in the present. I mean, retirement by definition is a future goal for most people, you know, in general. Yeah. So we'll see. Use our income calculator. I went over there. Hold on. Look at me getting distracted. Is this a talk about adult ADD? Oh, then they're trying to make me subscribe. Nope. All right, here we go. Just over a third of Americans met all 6 markers of a middle-class lifestyle. While about 9 in 10 Americans had health insurance, only 3/4 had health insurance and a steady job. I mean, 75% compared to 90%. I mean, it's 50% delta. With each added measure of financial security, more Americans slipped away from the middle class ideal. Let me go ahead and see. Secure job, can save money for the future, can handle $1,000 emergency fund, pay bills on time, health insurance, can retire comfortably. Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I mean, I would say, I mean, I don't have sick leave. My job does not have sick leave. We literally have PTO. There's usually annual leave and then sick leave. Sick leave is usually, there's no cap on, and it's not use or lose when quote unquote talk about sick leave. Time for money and vacation. Time is subjective. Money is subjective. Vacation is a different person. To own a home, still working on that, I guess, right? Eat a restaurant whenever you want, I guess. College education. So I mean, it's like, whatever. All right, here we go. Third of Americans match popular image of the middle class. All right, here we go. We're looking at American adults, 100% with insurance. Okay, I see what it's doing. As we're going to up into the right to the northeast, we're getting lower numbers. 91% have health insurance. And then how many, I got, okay, so how many people are American adults? 100%. How many of those American adults have health insurance? 91% and steady employment, so 75%. That can save for the future, 67. Pay bills without worry, 56. Afford emergency expenses, 45. And retire comfortably, 35%. So only 35% are meeting all six criteria. But see, my guy, this is how they're like tracking it, but I wonder what this looks like, you know, in a different form as you ask these questions. 65% do not yet, by definition, duh. Researchers often define the middle class based on income, in part because income data is frequently collected and easy to access. True. But that income doesn't guarantee a middle class lifestyle. The budget and net worth, my goodness. One commonly used definition, okay, shout out to Pew Research Center. Middle class income, according to Pew Research, between two-thirds and twice the national median income, or $67,819 to $203,458. As I said, over $100,000 difference. That's almost $170,000 right there. Is it almost 170? 203 minus 67. My bad, 170. It's almost 140. There we go. It's 136. I told you it's over 100K, and that's just for the whole country. Right, you look at, you know, more expensive cost of living places. Most Americans consider the lower end of that range, 75,000, 100,000, be middle class, according to the Post poll. Yeah, look, that's what I was talking about lower middle class, and upper middle class. If you want to talk about, most people, when they talk about middle class, they're probably talking the upper part or the higher end of lower middle class, and then the lower part of middle class, quote unquote, as know where the middle class range is, not like dead center of what people say, you know, is middle class when you look at these various ranges. I would say 75 to 100K for the whole country. For whole country average, yeah. I would say we're getting closer and closer for the whole country of 100K no longer being, excuse me, quote unquote, middle class, like getting closer to being lower middle class. And I think one of the issues, like, this is just talking about middle class. And then for those the first time listening, I do not read these articles ahead of time. I was just about to talk about the size of the family, what that is. 100K in the state of Maryland, unless you are living, you know, in the parts of Maryland that people don't consider Maryland. But if you're living in Howard, Baltimore County, Anne Arundel County, Baltimore County/City/Harford County, the Baltimore County/City areas, PG County, MoCo, and, you know, even Charles County, like the DMV type of areas, and the quote unquote Baltimore type areas, 100K. I mean, you can live in a city. That's a whole other conversation, though. But 100K is damn near poor here. Family of 400K is poor. You're only making on 100K, family of four, if you have no housing costs, as far as you don't have to pay rent for whatever reason, or you no longer have a mortgage, and you have no debt. That'd be the only way. And you got to be married, because you can't pay them. You can't pay single. You cannot pay single payer taxes. No. 100K is damn near poor, because you're bringing in. Remember. And retire comfortably. The retirement number for comfortably is definitely 15%, bare minimum. So when you add in 15% out of this 100K, now we're talking about 85,000. This is gross, by the way. This is pre-taxes, pre-deductions. We talk about $100,000 gross, pre-insurance, pre-taxes, pre-retirement, pre-anything. We just take out how much you need to retire. From a percentage standpoint, 15%, we're talking about $85,000. Talking about 75, what is that? What's that? Is that 9,000? No. 11. Yeah, we're talking about around $64,000 there. A family four in Maryland is not making it on 64. I think Maryland's median income is around 90. Let me double check. Yeah, Maryland's household income is right at 98. Okay, that's for 2022. So let's just call it $100,000. So yeah, no. And Maryland family of four, who is going to be able to retire comfortably, 85K is not stretching it. You make too much money to get government assistance, but I'll be damned to see that budget. And you bring it in. You might be bringing in $6,000 a month. Maybe at 85K. Then you pay insurance for a family of four. Yeah. Let's just say you're bringing in six. Let's say you're 13. Yeah, you can easily pay another $1,000 a month in insurance. So that's 12 right there. 85 minus 12 is 73. 6 times 12 is 72. It's $6,000. $6,000 family four in Maryland is. Again, you cannot have no house. You have to not be able to pay for housing. As far as not be able to pay, like, you don't have to make that payment. Thinking about a family four in the U.S., again, most Americans consider 75K to be middle class income. No, for a family of four. I want to know so bad where they actually ask these people at, you know, or where do they live, should I say. Thinking about a family of four in the U.S., would you describe each of the following annual income levels as lower, working class, middle class, or upper class? So you see, they just have the three, you know, lower class or working class, middle class, and upper class, but middle class has, you know, multiple ranges. So we got, why is it doing this? We got lower working class being viewed as some people bringing it up to like 150K. I see how it's traversing. All right, these are the questions people ask. In short, again, most people are considering it 75 to 100K. Cool, whatever. Even when looking at middle income Americans using Pew's more expensive range, the majority did not have the security social. Yes, we've gone over this multiple times. Sometimes I feel like I cover it too much, but the more money you make, that does not mean you're going to be in a situation where you're more quote unquote financially secure based on these data points, you know, in short, that this article is speaking to. All right, more money, more problems. A lot of times I say this many times on here, I've already said this before, the benefit of not making a lot of money, excluding student loan debt, is that you can't have but so much debt from an overall dollar standpoint because you don't have the money to qualify for it. All right, when you start getting into multiple six-figure range, over 200K plus, now you're able to start qualifying for a lot of debt because your income is there. But also your credit score, because you have such a high income, so you may be able to lock in for a period of time to increase your savings rate and then make it so you don't actually need the quote-unquote better credit score because of how much money you're actually getting from a loan standpoint isn't as much. That's the part that people want to talk about. Yeah, having more money. I mean, people who don't have crazy amount of student loan debt, but they're making under 100K, let's say they're making 50K tops, they're not about to come to me and tell me they got all this debt unless they had a sniffing like medical issue. That'd be the only time. That'd be the only time I would expect for them to say they have a lot of debt. But they can only have but so much. Now, it might be a lot relative to their income, percentage-wise, DTI, understandable. But we can increase your income past 50K pretty substantially, pretty quickly. Once you get to, relative to your job, you know, your field, but you come to me talking about you making 200K, I'm not about to look at you and tell you need to make more money, you know, unless you live in, like, you know, California or somewhere like that. You got a budgeting issue. You got a spending problem. All right, you got a discipline issue. Those that did tend to be older, had higher incomes, and were more likely to have a college education on their homes. This is people who meet the marker. So they tended to be older, makes sense, have more money. As you get older, you usually make more money. So that's kind of redundant there, but makes sense. And then college educated people and own their homes. People who have a college education, you make more money than people who don't. I mean, thank you, Washington Post. Excuse me. My wife brought home some African food, and this got me just burping like crazy. While the Post poll found 60%, of Americans considered home ownership essential to being middle class, homeowners over age 30 were more likely to be financially secure, even when comparing people with similar ages and incomes, according to the Federal Reserve Survey. Right. I guess you gotta be people who own homes should be pretty financially stable, especially, you know, after the market crash in 08, you know, don't want to be giving out these ghost loans. Anyways, the most common barrier was a comfortable retirement. Makes sense. And something that about half of middle income Americans over 35 felt they were on track to achieve. It's so hard to say, especially like when you see inflation like now, like this. This is the highest inflation we've seen since the 80s. So in short, the 80s is when millennials started being born. So millennials haven't experienced this level of inflation ever in their life. So when you're seeing this and you're like, okay, and then like when you lived through the pandemic, the panorama, and you saw what, you know, happened though in 08 with people's retirement, then it happens again, even though you're not near retirement age when the pandemic happened as far as millennials, like all that type of stuff. So it's hard to see, like, are you on track for when, you know, at 35, so let's say again, another 25 years, you know, 59 and a half, 60, like, I don't know what's going to happen in 25 years. Like, you know, the first 10 to 15 years of my working career have been insane, right? The early millennials were just graduating college when the market crashed in 2008. And then now you got the back end graduating during the pandemic, and you got the middle, you know, being in middle school, high school during the 08 crash, and then, you know, just starting, you know, 5 to 10 years or so being their career during the pandemic. So it's like, I don't know if we're on track, because it's just been so crazy out here, you know, living through, you know, 9/11. Like, it just been so much stuff, and every generation is like that. But with, you know, millennials being on the internet as much as our generation is, but before Gen Z though, so we weren't like always on the internet, it's a lot of stuff. It's like, man, I'm not even going to sit here and try to act like I know what the future is going to look like when it's time for me to retire. Like, I'm trusting all the various information I've seen out there from retirement, investment, financial experts, you know, fiduciaries, and they say how much I need to put away, and I'm, you know, working to get to that amount. I mean, it's that simple. And the percentage they got is wrong, and I guess I'll just be up a creek, you know, save more than what they recommend. But it's just, you know, people say anywhere from 10 to 25%. It's like, all right, I'll try to get above 25%, then do the best I can. But, you know, it is what it is. Most middle income people lack middle class financial security. Okay. So that's saying people in the 75 to 100K range, what do they meet from the criteria? Americans overall, 35%. Again, lower income, 16%. Middle income, 68K to 203K, 46%. And then upper income, 203 or above, 67%. All right, and then it's breaking down where lower, middle, and upper class people fit from a health insurance standpoint. For health insurance, upper class people making over $203,000, 99% got health insurance. Yep, and the lowest one is being able to. And it's not even the lowest one. I mean, steady job is at 93%. Employment, you know, market, pandemic, things like that. It's crazy that pay for an emergency fund. $1,000 to pay for emergency fund. Having the $1,000 for an emergency expense, you know, is at 93%, same as being able to have a steady job. It's like, okay. But yeah, you see, being able to retire comfortably, it's like, people really don't know. But it's interesting to see how high these percentages are for people. As you can imagine, for those listening to podcast platforms, as you make more money, you have a higher percentage of saying yes, you know, you have health insurance, yes, you're able to save, et cetera, for these six points they're looking at for criteria perspective. Let's see. I feel like we're almost wrapping up here. Ooh, Gallup polling last spring found that retirement was Americans' top financial worry. Not their debt. Even for those who can save, retirement planning requires complicated judgments about how long someone expects to live and the future of government support through programs such as Social Security and Medicare. For millennials, definitely Gen Z. Gen Z don't even worry about Social Security. I mean, worried about what the fall is going to be, but they already said millennials Social Security is not going to be there for us. Gen Z, y'all should figure out why you guys pay tax. Why are you paying for tax for something that y'all know is y'all not going to have? But that's another point for me, you know, maybe another day, another episode. But when it comes to figuring out, when it says, you know, different, maybe hard judgments about, you know, should you have a 401k or a Roth 401k or IRA, Roth IRA, you know, just an IRA, Roth IRA, like how to do that as far as, you know, your bucket strategy. For those listening to Money Guys, you know, you got tax deferred, you got stuff you've already paid taxes on, and then you got taxable, right? Those three general buckets of like a 401k would be tax deferred, traditional. Then you got a Roth IRA would be you've already paid taxes on it, so tax free. And then you got a taxable brokerage account, like a personal brokerage account that, you know, you're paying taxes on, you know, throughout the year for dividends. And then, you know, as you sell and things like that, and no early, no penalty for, you know, early withdrawals, things like that. We got those three general buckets. Like, okay, yeah, but expecting how long you're going to live, how long do you plan on living till? My number is 100, so I got to have enough money to get to 100. Once I get to 100, you know, September 30th, what is that? September 30th of 2093, I'd be good to go. I told my wife, I said, you can leave then too. I said, look, we would have put in over 70 years. I'm good. Once I hit 100, my 100th birthday, I'm good. I'm good. You know, if Jesus has not come back then, or whoever y'all believe in, but if Jesus has not come back then, I'm good. I'm good once I get to my 100th birthday. But plan how long you want to live. I mean, it's not, and again, let's be very clear. Most people, especially in the United States of America, are not going to hit 100. I think the age is around, you know, like 77 to 80 in that range. Maybe that's the whole planet. But, you know, 100 is a, most humans do not live to be 100. So just plan that you're going to be, you know, live to around that age. And then the one thing too is these markers. I said, how much do we think we're going to talk about debt on here? We have not, I believe, talked about debt one time, which is crazy for the type of topics that I, you know, when I say prefer, but, you know, I generally talk about. Debt has not been mentioned one time. When it comes to retirement, having debt when you retire, it's got to be off the table. Again, I'd be hard pressed for you to show me an investment professional, a fiduciary on the financial, someone in the financial world to say that for those who want to do the quote unquote traditional route and have retirement based accounts, retire the quote unquote traditional way, how your mortgage payment is part of what you need to pay for when you're taking your distributions from your retirement. No, when you retire, what do you do? You lose your health care coverage. Now you got to get, you can't get Medicare, but you might want to get some marketplace, you know, marketplace plan that isn't Medicare. That stuff is expensive. All right, and then you're out of the sandwich generation, but I remember I talked about this before, and I might be, you know, saying it more often now because, you know, I have a kid. But then, if you're grandparents, you might be great-grandparents, right? And most people, just by simple logic, have more grandkids than they have kids, and they have more great-grandkids than they have grandkids. You know what I mean? Just, you know, it's how that math works. So, I mean, just think about all the stuff that you end up having to pay for. And then, again, health care, if you got to get it put into a home, right, like, you can't take care of yourself, but you're not, quote unquote, you know, dying, right? You just, you know, need someone to take care of you. All that stuff has to be equated to, you know, your future planning. Don't plan for the government supporting you, by the way. Anyways, the de facto landscape now for retirement is to save like hell and hope you don't live too long, said Ben Harris. What the hell does that mean, Ben? Don't save a whole bunch of money to not end up spending it. Shout out to estate planning. Ben Harris, Vice President and Director of Economic Studies at Brookings. And that's it's a terrible pair. Okay, Ben agrees. Okay, it's a terrible paradigm. Yes. All right, I just want to double check. Like, what, Ben? The shift from defined benefit plans to individual retirement accounts has increased the importance of saving for retirement at the same time as rising housing and student loan payments are taking up a growing share of income. We're into debt. I guess when we talk about housing, we could be considered talking about debt, but, you know, that's not consumer debt. But student loan payments, here we go. Yep, taking a more of a share, you know, income, according to Anna Maria Lucidary, senior fellow at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy and Research. Here we go. Yes, we talk about housing, how much that's going up, and then student loan payments, how much that is going up. Yeah, do everything you can to avoid that. I've already said this before. For those of you who have sons, all I'm going to say is the best option, like, is just looking more and more like the military. And by the way, I'm not saying people need to do their 20, but if you serve, the amount of resources you get access to, gotta get your honorable discharge, right? Don't go in the military and get dishonorable. But the amount of resources you get by serving 36 months in the United States military is insane. The amount of resources you have that are open for you to be able to ask as far as what you qualify for if you meet certain things is insane. Being my wife is a disabled veteran and looking at how much stuff she gets access to by being 100% PNT, unreal. My wife ended up getting hurt, so she ended up getting out before she only did 25 months. But it's like you, the amount of stuff, like I have a list of things that like we had to look at, you know, to see if it makes sense for us. That is open up to is crazy. I mean, a lot of people, I didn't know this myself until I ended up having a client who was 100% PNT, and he was telling me how much money he got. I said, what? I said, I knew disabled veterans got money, but I did not know it was this much. And some people might not think it's a lot because it's not, there's no cost of living adjustment. But if you're 100% PNT, which is permanent total, for people who don't know, but in short, you have 100% disability rating, VA math is a whole another issue, but they get $3,737 a month tax-free. And if they're PNT, which is permanent total, meaning it's not going to change in short, unless they find some type of fraud, they'll never reduce your rating. They get that every month for the rest of their life. And when you talk about $3,700 being, four is going to be 48. Somewhere roughly around 45. What was that? $45,000. Yeah, right around $45,000. $45,000 might not sound like a lot when you're talking gross before you get tax and deductions taken out. But this is net. So you're getting $45,000 net. $3,700 a month is a lot of money if you were to equate going and getting a job for that. And on top of that, since you get this disability income from the VA, you also get VA healthcare, which is a whole nother issue. But in short, for the most part, is free. So, I mean, it is free. You get it for quote unquote free. I mean, you know, you serve and you are a disabled veteran. But look, when we had our son, we used the VA. We didn't pay a dime. We didn't have to pay for a dime. We paid for some stuff because we had, you know, gestational diabetes. So we paid for some stuff out of pocket so she could get it right away. But we didn't have to pay for anything if we chose to. And Them bills is somewhere in here. I mean, if it was under my insurance, you know, my insurance would pay for some of it. But that birth was like $20K. We paid nothing. And this type of stuff where I think people don't think about when it comes to like planning, like your life out. And so, again, take that military route. For those of you got sons, it's something I highly recommend. And the one thing too with the military is people go in without a plan and thus they get screwed with it. If you go in with a plan, it's a lot easier to operate, especially, you know, like, yeah, I'm going to go in this, I'm into this. And also too, you can take the officer route. They'll pay for you to go to school. That's the one thing too. When they talk about housing, if you don't want to pay for college and join the military will pay for you to go to college. That's another thing too. My wife now, they'll pay for her to go to college, the GI Bill. Most people in general, I believe, know about the GI Bill. They'll pay for her to go to college, but then they'll also give her housing assistance as well. And it's like, what? But then since my wife's a disabled veteran, she has access to something that's called the VRNE. Look at me just giving a... I guess this is related to this. Every time I say it, I guess I go off track. But this is talking about understanding, you know, talking about the middle class lifestyle. One way to get out of it is doing what you can to get as many resources into your household as possible. And the only way to get these VA benefits is to join the military and get that honorable discharge. It is the only way. It is the only way to get it. And so now my wife, she has still time left on her GI Bill, but since she does, it's called vocational readiness and employment, and sure, for disabled veterans, they have disabilities and their disabilities impact their ability to work. That's why they're disabled veteran get compensation. And so this is another program they do, but it's not an educational program. Since it's not an educational program, it doesn't impact their GI benefits. However, since my wife still has GI Bill left as far as some months on it, she gets the housing, the BAH at the GI Bill rate, which is almost double of what it is for the VRNE rate. And it's like, what? But the VRNE, guess what VRNE does? It pays for all of her school, all of her tuition. The GI Bill does not pay for all tuition at every single school. Some schools it does, but it doesn't pay for it at every school. And that's why it's like, what? So now they'll pay for her to go get her education. And on top of that, they'll give her a housing allowance. Oh, you know, I mean, just not books or tuition. They pay for her to get a laptop, printer, all this type of stuff. And it's, when my wife went back to school for the GI Bill, it's 2022, the amount of paper, we got sent 2,500 pieces of paper. I don't know if we'll ever go through this. Like, it's moved with us twice. Like, it's almost not like debt, but you know, when Dave Ramsey talks about debt, like it's a bad, you know, it's like a pet. Like, I'm just looking at this paper and I'm thinking, when will we go through 2,500 pieces of paper? That's what we got sent. And so I'm saying this to say, when people are talking about middle class and the ability to move forward in the economy and things like that, there are so many resources out here available to you. Take the military route and you don't have to do your 20. If you want to do your 20, that's a decision you got to make. You know, I'm not telling people, you know, be like my dad or like my uncle, you know, people that I know, so, you know, Jordan's, both of Jordan's parents did, you know, they're 20 plus. That's a completely different conversation. If you want to do retirement, that's a completely different conversation. But those 36 months, I used to say 4 years, that's what, you know, the contract is for. The amount of stuff you will be able to access if you do your 4 months in the military is insane. So that's my little spiel on that. So I can at least say I put it on the internet. But I highly recommend for all men. There's people who have sons, I say, tell them to go to the military. Women, it's the same thing, but obviously you have to worry about, you know, like the SA, law and order, SVU type stuff and things like that that you can't experience in the military. And they always send, you know, all these emails out and stuff like that, prevention. You see all the posters and things like that when you're in government facilities. That is one thing you do have to worry about as women, but, you know, the officer route, in theory, would quote unquote give you more protection because, you know, you have a higher rank. And I'm just saying that just as a general statement for skinner coming in at, you know, E1, right? As a private, just coming right out. At least you come in as an O1, as a, you know, coming in as a second lieutenant or an ensign, you know, in theory, you would have some type of, you know, power, and you won't be in the same type of enlistment environment as you with the officer route type of thing. And again, though, you do officer routes too. Again, you do, you know, you don't have to, if you become an officer, you don't have to do your 20 for that either, right? You can still, you know, get out before your 20 if you do that. So these are the things that people need to consider for millennials and Gen Z having kids. You're looking like, oh, I'm not gonna be able to afford college. They can do the, they can go in the military and have the military pay for them. And while you can have the military, you can have for the military pay for your college while you're in the military, then get out and still have access to the GI Bill and the VRE program. Like, it's insane. It is insane how much education you can get. And I think a lot of people don't understand that the military has to have the best stuff, because that's the end all be all of us, in short, of a country. I mean, whatever you can protect, you're only as good as what you can protect slash defend. And, you know, our military, you know, and the VA stuff is on a completely different budget. You know, the military is on the DOD, but, you know, the people in the military at the top are not incompetent. They have a lot of education. I mean, to be an officer, you have, I wouldn't say 99% of the time, you have to be college educated. You can't be an officer in the military and not have a bachelor's degree. All right. Anyways, though, there was a time in which family income was a lot more defining about your life and your financial security. Lusardi said, but now you're in charge of much more of your future, particularly in terms of financial decisions that people have been asked to make. All right. While a path to middle class financial security has become more complicated, the share of people with it hasn't markedly declined over time. I just want to say, too, by the way, when I was talking about the VA disability, it's $3,700, and that's just if you're single. Once you get married, a lot of people probably don't know. In the military, though, you know, you get married, make more money, and every kid you have, they give you more money. The same thing for your VA disability benefits. My wife got married, she got more money for me. Then we had our son, she got more money for him. So, like, it scales up when you, that type of stuff happens. And they give you a true COLA adjustment, a cost of living adjustment. So when inflation is crazy high, they, whatever they deem, well, quote unquote, inflation was, or what the COLA needs to be for Social Security, they raise the VA rates that as well. So let's say when inflation was like almost 8-9% going into 2023, going into last year, so coming out of 2022, they raised the VA pay by that amount. So it's not one of these things where your job's like, yeah, inflation was crazy high this year, it was 8%, so we're giving you a 2% raise. It's like, what? I'm still down 6%. No, these are the things that when you know, they're talking about, if you're not, let's say money is loud, you're just not in the room to hear it. These are the things, if you're not in this environment and you don't have exposure to it, that you don't understand. And then, you know, you see people doing certain things, it's like, oh, because I've told one of my dad's best friends in the military, he's retired, and then his wife is retired too. And I'm thinking, dang, how did I get that big ass house? And I'm thinking, once I realized how much 100% P&T was, and since, you know, it actually adjusts for inflation, I'm thinking, oh, because I'm thinking, if I was 100%, and my wife is 100%, that's 37 plus 37. Y'all, that's $7,400 a month. That's $7,400 a month is a lot of money. Just coming in every month on the first, certainly the day before the first, you know, you get that day early with direct deposit. But I'm thinking like, yo, if you had 70, think about right now, if you had $7,400 a month coming in guaranteed, and that could be more than that because you're married, so it'd be closer to eight. Then if you have kids, it'd be, come on now, y'all. I'm just saying there's only one way to access to it. That's why I'm kind of harping on it so much. All right, since 2017, the earliest year of comparable data, between 32 and 40% of Americans met all six measures, with a low in 2017, a high in 2021, high in the panorama. All right. Another survey, the Federal Reserve of Consumer Finances, says that it provides a broader view of American financial stability. Okay, back in the 1980s, more Americans have $1,000 in liquid savings than they did 40 years ago, after adjusting for inflation. But I believe that debt should be higher. So that's, and the share of Americans with money in retirement or pension account has held steady over the past 40 years. But the debt. On-time debt payments. Where's the total? See, it's talking about $1,000 in liquid assets, money in retirement accounts or pension. We're at 79% versus 71%. No let debt payments in the last year. Yeah, cool. No, we need total debt. That total debt is what's increased. And this is why I do this. That's the part this is missing. Yes, okay. Americans adjusted for inflation have more money in savings, as far as at least $1,000 in liquid assets. Retirement accounts / pension, roughly the same. No late debt payments, roughly the same. And then savings in the last year, roughly the same. Cool. But how much total debt? Because that liquidity of $1,000, that's in savings, but on a month-to-month basis as far as their budget. The idea that you can have a secure job with predictable wages, healthcare and retirement, and being able to pay for your housing, those things are all a part of a mid-century vision of the middle-class life trajectory, said Zaloom, the anthropologist. I need to refresh on what anthropologist is. There we go. That's what I thought. All right. Even in the 1960s, the idea that this was very widespread phenomenon was always kind of fiction. She added, the draw of the middle class is rooted in far more than the desire for financial security. You never want to be in the middle, by the way. Anyways, it's the perfect model of American identity, said culture historian Larry Samuel, author of The American Middle Class, A Cultural History. It fits so well with our ethos of egalitarianism and being a meritocracy. These are all myths, of course, but they're embedded in how we see ourselves. It's a club that everyone kind of wants to be a part of, Samuel said, regardless of your economic circumstances. I don't want to be in the middle class. I don't want to be in the middle. I want to be as high up as I can possibly get. But all right, y'all, that's it. Locked and loaded again. How Americans define a middle class lifestyle and why they can't reach it, by Alyssa Fowers, Emily Guskin, and Scott Clement. Look, I already gave y'all the spiel. And look, I'm not telling everybody, when I say like, I'm not forced, I'm not telling everybody to join the military. If you don't want your sons to join the military, don't have them join the military. But God dang, I'd be damned if everybody just keep taking out all this debt and there's people out here, you know, when I say people, I mean, us as taxpayers for the government, they'll pay for you to go to school. Look, I had student loans up the whole time. I need my middle class lifestyle up. The way I look at it now is, it is money, but it's quote unquote resources. When I look at all the resources that my wife has access to for 25 months, now it does come, you know what I mean? So yeah, you to get 100% PNT, in most cases, you got to have a lot of stuff wrong with you. However, not all, but most people's case, the stressor is different. I mean, if you look at the symptoms, 38 CFR, in short, if you just Google 38 CFR Code of Federal Regulations, you look up all the symptoms that these veterans have, a lot of you probably have those symptoms. You just don't have the stressor because you were never in the military, so you can't claim that. That's usually the only difference. If you hurt your ankle, and my wife broke her ankle, you sprained it technically. She had a fracture. She had to get surgery on it twice. If I sprained my ankle too, but I didn't serve in the military, so I can't be a veteran by definition. So I don't have a claim for that, saying that the military caused it. That's the main difference. The only difference, truly. Because symptoms are symptoms. It's why, if you look at it, like the mental health rating for veterans, they rate all mental health conditions the exact same, all of them. All of them are have the exact same rating because, yes, the stressor may be different, but the symptoms are so closely aligned, they quote unquote say that they can't, you know, truly, I say quote unquote, but, you know, they say they can't really differentiate between what you have, meaning PTSD versus anxiety versus severe depression, you know, all these different type of things. They just rate them all the same. Different stressors, right? Somebody goes to war, you know, on deployment versus somebody who never actually went on deployment. Everybody, right, has a different stressor, but we're going to, you know, view you all having the same symptoms. A lot of people out here are dealing with anxiety and depression. You just didn't get it from the military. So your symptoms will qualify you for some compensation, ability to get access since you served in the military. And now, you know, say you're out, you're a veteran, so you got your honorable discharge and you're a disabled veteran, you get compensation. You obviously have access to the VA loan, but you get to bypass the VA funding fee. The VA funding fee, in short, is the VA's version of PMI. But since you're a disabled veteran, you don't have to pay the funding fee. So now you don't have to pay PMI. Then if you're able to get 100% / 100% PNT, depends on the state you're in, you don't have to pay taxes. So you get to skip property taxes and you don't have to pay PMI if you're not able to put 20% down. You don't have to, by the way, you don't have to put anything down with a VA loan. A whole lot of conversation. Don't recommend you put 0% down on a mortgage. But it, again, resources, things that you have access to. All right. That's it, y'all. Locked and loaded. End of the episode. Make sure you comment, like, share, and subscribe. Leave those rating reviews on the podcast platforms. Shout out to the YouTube out. Shout out to YouTube algorithm. Leave those rating reviews on the podcast platforms as well. My information, as well as my co-host Jordan information, can be found in the description. Jordan is Stop Stalling J. Business page is finallyfit.live. That's where you can go to sign up for the 5:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time virtual training sessions. I'm not going to say they're Monday and Wednesday, because Jordan's changed it to Wednesday and Friday now. So in short, sign up, reach out to Jordan. It's Jordan's business, not mine. I cannot tell you when we're going to have class. I just tell you, like, it's Thursday night. I got to go to class in less than 5 hours right now. All right. And for myself, Sideline_Corey, you can reach out to me for financial information. All right, y'all. Again, necessities, debt payments, investments, lifestyle. Do your best to lock in. Look at resources you have access to. And be willing to put in the work and make the sacrifices to create the life that you want for yourself. Don't expect other people to, you know, create it for you, because why would I spend time helping you build your life if I'm still not at the point where I've actually built my foundation? And most people have no foundation. That's why they're so unstable. They're not ready for it. It's too late for the bars. All right, y'all. That's it. Remember to say more and say less. I was locked and loaded end of the episode. Did I say that? I'm off. Locked and loaded end of the episode. That's it, y'all. Remember to say more and say less. Keep making better your best. And I'll catch y'all in the next one.